Well, good evening, everyone. It's cold, it's raining. I feel like we should get a medal for making it out tonight. I feel like we should get a medal for making it through Leviticus, too. So let's all pat ourselves on the back. Now, so we finished up our study on Leviticus on Sunday. And I hope that was profitable for you. I definitely learned a lot. I've never taught Leviticus before. I've never looked at it that in depth before. So I was very happy to do that. And I hope that it was helpful for you as well. We're now going to venture into Numbers. My plan for right now, and I'm just going to phrase it that way for right now, is not to spend as long in Numbers as we did in Leviticus. Numbers is a much more narrative-driven book. There's a lot that happens in it, though. So we may delve into some of these things. We'll just see how it goes. I've already been given permission by Kevin to go as long as I want to. So I'll take that for what it's worth. And I told him I'd just let him know when I thought I was going to be done. But we're going to dive right into the book tonight and cover a few things. My comments tonight are mostly going to be introductory. We'll talk about kind of some of the structure of the book and the purpose of the book. And then if we have time, we'll just go ahead and dive right into it. So if you are familiar with Numbers at all, that's a little bit washed out, isn't it? Let's see. Let's see if I can, that's a little better. Okay, so the name Numbers, one of the reasons I guess we don't like to study this book very much is because the name is not very interesting. And because of why the name is not very interesting. What's in the book of Numbers that makes it so uninteresting for so many people? At least some parts of it.
Counting.
The name implies it, right? It's numbers. It's counting. It's the census. Everybody gets confused on it. Is it census? Is it sensi or censuses? I don't know what the plural is, but there are names and dates involved, and counting with numbers and all those types of things. And we don't recognize a lot of these names, so we don't really see the importance of that. Though I will say, maybe I'm just kind of a screwball, I love the census records throughout scriptures, because when you start looking for kind of some nuggets and making some connections in the census, there's some really interesting things in there. If you skip over the census in Matthew and Luke, you're missing out on a ton as far as the meaning of those books. But there's some things here in the Numbers census that I think are interesting. But yeah, so one reason we don't like Numbers is because of, well, the numbers. And that's really where that name comes from. It's from a Greek name from which we get the word arithmetic. So that already kind of sets it back. And then the Latin name, it means something else, but basically the same thing. And then from all that, we get the phrase, or the name Numbers. However, the original Hebrew name for this book is Bemidbar, means in the wilderness. Now, why would it mean in the wilderness? Why is that an appropriate name? Because they're in the wilderness, right? That's where they are. Okay? And so, when we look at this book, we are picking up right where Leviticus left off. Now, where was Israel during the book of Leviticus? They're at Mount Sinai, okay? So that's where they've been since halfway through Exodus. They've been at Sinai, so they've been here this whole time. Now, the time from the end of Exodus to the end of Leviticus is, give or take, probably about 8 to 10 months or so. That's kind of why there's not much narrative in Leviticus. Not much narratively has happened all that much, except for the children of Israel being at the foot of Mount Sinai and Moses going up into the mountain to receive the laws and then meeting with the Lord at the tent of meeting as various situations arise. And the first 10 chapters of Numbers are going to be the exact same way. So when we look at the beginning of Numbers, chronologically speaking, we're at the exact same place. There's about a month's difference between the end of Exodus and the beginning of Numbers. as far as how it's laid out. Exodus chapter 40 and verse 17. When Moses, it lists the preparations for the tabernacle being completed. In Exodus chapter 40 and verse 17, and the tabernacle is being set up, it says, the tabernacle was set up in the first month of the second year. Now, when it says the second year, what are we counting from? Okay, leaving Egypt, right? So the Passover, the night of the Passover, is considered to be the first day of the first month of the first year. It's a new calendar. We have a new nation, a new people, and thus a new calendar. And so from that point, we start counting upwards. Okay, if you look at many modern Jewish calendars, they are still counting from that particular spot. They won't list this as the year 2020. They'll list it as, I can't even remember what the count is at this point. But either way, Exodus 40:17, the tabernacle was set up in the first month of the second year on the first day of the month. Now, if you skip over to Numbers chapter 1 and verse 1, it says, the Lord spoke to Moses in the tent of meeting in the wilderness of Sinai on the first day of the second month of the second year after Israel's departure from the land of Egypt. So we got give or take about a month. Now, I said chronologically, we're picking up right where Leviticus left off. And we're going to talk about this in just a minute, but there's a small amount of overlap between Leviticus and the beginning of Numbers. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. So we're not... There's a little bit of kind of chronological gymnastics happening there, but it's not a big deal. Nothing's really out of place. It's just mentioned in different spots. Okay. Geographically speaking, obviously, again, we're still in the same spot. If you look at the very last chapter of Leviticus, Leviticus chapter 27, and verse 34, the very last verse, these are the commands the Lord gave Moses for the Israelites on Mount Sinai. And then Numbers chapter 1 and verse 1, the Lord spoke to Moses in the tent of meeting in the wilderness of Sinai on the first day of the second month. So we're still in the same spot. Okay, so however, some things have progressed. And I think I probably mentioned this in the Leviticus class, but if you look at Leviticus chapter 1 and verse 1 and Numbers chapter 1 and verse 1, we'll notice something similar but slightly different. And I apologize that my voice is not cooperating a whole lot tonight. I've had a rough couple of days as far as health-wise, but I'll try to speak up. So Leviticus chapter 1 and verse 1. Then the Lord summoned Moses and spoke to him from the tent of meeting. And now Numbers 1:1, the Lord spoke to Moses in the tent of meeting. So we mentioned in Leviticus that there are zones of holiness. Okay, and so at the beginning of Leviticus, Moses was kept outside in some regard, and now he has been brought closer to the Lord. The tabernacle has been anointed and consecrated. The people have been anointed and consecrated. And so as such, Moses is now much closer to the Lord. And we might think, how could he get much closer? I mean, when he was up in the mountain, he was reflecting the glory of the Lord. Well, just the fact that he's in the tent of meeting now says something about the relationship between God and his people.
And I think that's a very significant point. It's essentially saying that what God intended to do in the book of Leviticus mm-hmm. worked.
Yes.
That's what he was trying to do.
Yes.
Bring them back to him. And now we see that it actually worked.
Yes, yes. And so we've kind of talked about the tabernacle being kind of this, a semi-Edenic state, okay? The Lord is among his people. That was the goal. That's what was lost in Eden. And while it has not been completely restored, because there is still sin in the world and sin still has to be dealt with, God is now among his people, and he has given them a way that he can stay that way and they can be close to him. So yes, I mean, the fact that we now have this much closer relationship with the Lord, these ideals are starting to come into play. So yes, it's a positive step in the right direction. Now, over the course of this year, consider the events that have led to this point. This is from Bob and Sandra Waldron's commentary. If you've seen those, we've got a bunch of them in the back. They're some of the most excellent resources available. If you're interested in a history and geography of the Bible and all of those things, I highly, highly recommend them to you if you haven't been through them before. But this was their commentary on this particular stage of Israel's development. Take time to think of all that's happened in that year. Israel crossed the Red Sea on dry land. They found the bitter water at Marah, and God made it sweet for them. The manna began when they had been out of Egypt 1 month. They received water from a rock and fought the Amalekites at Rephidim. They arrived at Mount Sinai in the 3rd month. Since that time, here at Sinai, God has spoken to them from the mount and has made a covenant with them. The people promised to do all that God said, even though they asked that God never again speak directly to them. The covenant was ratified, and Moses went into the mount to receive the complete law. He was gone so long, the people gave him up for lost and demanded that Aaron make them a god, and he made them the golden calf. Well, that broke their covenant with God, and God was ready to destroy them all. Moses interceded for the people, and the covenant was finally renewed. Moses returned to the mount for another 40 days, while the people waited at the foot for more instructions. This time, when Moses returned, they were ready to build the tabernacle. They worked hard on the structure, giving freely of their own possessions. And I might add, so freely that Moses had to tell them to stop at one point. Stop giving. And they made everything exactly according to the pattern God had given Moses. Now the tabernacle is finished. It is dedicated, and the priests have been consecrated and have started their work. Each tribe has sent its gift to establish a flock and a supply of materials needed for the regular sacrifice. And we'll see that in the beginning of Numbers. 1 year is complete. It has been a big year for Israel. Now, I think about the year that I just went through. I was going through my Facebook feed, and I was looking at a picture the other day of something that, you know, a picture I posted a year ago. And I thought, how in the world has it already been 1 year? Think of everything that has happened with Israel in the period of 1 year. They went from a nation of no-name slaves to now being a nation, an established nation of people with laws and a tabernacle and their king, the Lord God, their king, dwelling in the midst of them. A king that will fight their battles for them and will win every single one of them if they will put their trust in him. They are better off now than they will be for a very long time. Okay? And then we have the book of Numbers. this is gonna go sideways in just a few chapters, unfortunately. But right now, they're in a very good spot. Okay? So when we look at kind of the structure of Numbers, it breaks down very easily into 5 main parts. There are 3 parts that are where Israel is stationary and 2 parts where they are traveling from place to place. And we can put all of these in subcategories as far as where they go and what happens at those places. But this is a basic structure of the book itself. Again, the first 10 chapters, they are still at Mount Sinai. They're still getting a few more laws, and they are preparing themselves to go on the march. Then at the last half of chapter 10 through chapter 12, they begin their sojourn out into the wilderness. Now, this is a sojourn that should, by many estimates, have only taken about 2 weeks to get to the edge of the promised land. Unfortunately, we get to chapter 13, and then some things start to happen, and that becomes problematic. Okay? So, we have this first period of traveling, and even within that short period of travel, Israel begins to grumble against the Lord. Or your translations might say murmur against the Lord. Okay? And so then, chapters 13 through 19, they camp out in the wilderness of Paran. We have quite a few events that happen here. I'll show you some of those in just a minute. We have another period of travel, chapters 20 and 21. And in this period of time, that first generation begins to die out. Okay? So when we're looking at this, really much of the book takes place with that first generation still being in play. And then as we get to the edge of the plains of Moab, that's when that first generation finally dies out. And then chapters 25 through 36 is really concentrated on that second generation that's about to venture into the promised land. I'll leave this up for just a minute. But looking at kind of some of those major events through the book, again, here in that first section, we're making preparations to leave the camp. The tribes are being organized. They're given their marching orders. And many of the things are being prepared. Some of the laws are being clarified and reiterated. And then within this particular section, chapter-wise, there are a few things that I would posit happen back in Leviticus. So again, chronologically speaking, they're a little bit out of order. But at the end of this first travel section, we come to Paran, and that's when the spies are sent into Canaan. And then, of course, many bring back a bad report, and two bring back a good report. And then the events that happen because of that. Directly after that, we have Miriam and Aaron even beginning to rebel against Moses. And then we have Korah's rebellion. So all the people are grumbling now. They're seeking a new leader. They don't like what Moses has done, even though Moses has done exactly what the Lord has said he should do. And probably even more than that, for the fact that he's interceded on their behalf time and time again, even though they have rebuffed him over and over again. Okay? And so then eventually we even get to a point where Moses loses his cool. And that's the story where he strikes the rock, even though he's not supposed to, and he suffers the consequences of that. We'll talk about that more when we get to that section. That's a hard story to deal with, and kind of the implications of that. But nonetheless, that's what we have before us. As we get to the end of that travel section and we come to the edge of the plains of Moab, Israel is camped just outside the promised land right before Deuteronomy begins. This is where we have the story of Balaam, Balak, and the donkey. And we kind of often look at this story in terms of Balaam and the donkey. Because, that's how we teach it to the kids. But I want to look at this in terms of kind of, first of all, what God is doing without Israel even realizing it, potentially. And what Balaam does when he can't even control it. the kind of poetry language that's there as Balaam is prophesying. He's giving the words that the Lord has given him to speak. And those very words become key to what Israel will be looking for in the Messiah when he eventually comes. So it's very interesting. We have a pagan prophet who is called on to curse Israel, and he ends up delivering a prophecy about the salvation of not only Israel, but of the entire world that comes through Israel. And so it's a very interesting thing to look at there in Numbers chapter 22. And then we get to the very end of the second generation there, the plague at Baal Peor, and the implications of that and what transpires because of that. That marks the end of that first generation, and then the second generation picks up from there. And that second generation becomes a time of hope, because then they start to go into the land, they start to actually conquer as they're supposed to, and we even begin to see some of the settlements of the land. As some of the first tribes on the other side of the Jordan begin to get their allotments and the implications of that. Okay, so any additional thoughts on the structure of Numbers or kind of how we're going to look at that. Eddie?
There's a thought that's kind of going through my head, but I think it's organized well enough to sort of get to. It's very Leviticus and Numbers. Really, it's just the second round of the book of Genesis. Mm-hmm. Book of Genesis begins with Eden, mm-hmm. and then, like you said, it goes sideways almost immediately with mm-hmm. the sin of the sons, or Adam and Eve, and then their sons.
Yes.
It gets better as God makes promises to Abraham, but then goes downhill again when you look at some of the sons and grandsons of Abraham, and great-grandsons. Mm-hmm. Well, Leviticus, God brings man back to him, mm-hmm. the point of being, you know, in the tent of meeting. And now Numbers is going to go sideways again, but then the second generation, there's your hope. Mm-hmm. And yet this cycle is going to continue.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yep. And then when we get to the book of Judges, it all goes wonky again. Yep. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, again, we're looking for patterns in the Bible. You know, we certainly need to be looking for godly patterns, things that he has designed. But we also need to be looking at patterns of what happens when Israel is unfaithful versus when they are faithful. And we'll talk about that in just a minute as one of the things that we see in the book of Numbers. It's one of the key things I think we need to take from the book. But yes, certainly. I mean, we see the roller coaster nature of man's relationship with God just as it's confronted with us in Israel. I want to hit that point. I want to bring that point home in just a minute. So, anything else on this? Any other thoughts? Very good. Okay. I know a lot of this is kind of introductory. We haven't really got into the thick of anything yet. But before we get into the book, maybe some things to keep in mind as we're going through. First of all, keep in mind that God has fulfilled at this point at least two of the first promises that he made to Abraham. Which promises are we? Which promises has God fulfilled at this point? Okay, the big family, right? He's made the big family through Abraham and then through on down through that line. What else? We just said it a second ago. What's that? And it's at the end of the bullet, if anybody reads it. What is it? He's made them into a nation, right? He's taken this family and he's made them into an established nation. That's right. Okay, and so at this point, he is getting ready to establish the third promise. That's what the book of Numbers is supposed to be. Now, the tragic nature of this, somebody said one time, is that 2/3 of this book never should have happened. And yet we have it recorded for us. Okay? So when we're looking at this, keep in mind, God has kept his part of the bargain. Okay? Everything God said he was going to do, he has done. And so why in the world would they think that he meant for them not to have any of the other ones? And yet, that's how we as humans tend to be. Okay? Another thing that I get from the book of Numbers is God is a God of order, not confusion. When you look both through the census records, when you look at the organization of how Israel is to set up camp, and then consequently how they are to break down camp and march, and what they, you know, how the Levites are divided out and their responsibilities, and why God chooses the Levites, and what they're supposed to do. All of this is in a very orderly fashion. Okay? Now, oftentimes, much of kind of modern religion, and really I would say even ancient religion, is based on do what you feel. God will let you know that this feels good, so you just do what feels good, and as long as you got God in mind while you're doing it, it's all good. God is a God of order, okay? And I'm not saying that in what many people nowadays will term a legalistic sense. We have highly, highly misused that term, by the way. But God has a plan in all of this, and the order is part of the plan. And so we've got to see that. So God is a God of order, not confusion. There is method to God's instruction. Now, some of this may be very obvious to us. Again, how the camp is structured with God being in the middle of it and the Levites being just around that, and then the rest of the camps being around that, and then God being in the midst of them as they march. All of those types of things, we can see that order. But there may be some things here that we don't see, especially that Israel won't see until it's seen from a much either more distant or higher perspective. Okay, so be looking for those types of patterns and that type of structure as you look through these books, and it will help with meaning. All right, so another thing that we'll see in the book of Numbers, and this contributes to the, you know, that cycle that we see, that kind of roller coaster of Israel's faithfulness and unfaithfulness. God's people are free to make choices. There is nowhere that God is going to compel your brain to obey Him, to serve Him. Okay? And so God's people are free to make choices. The covenant that they established with Him was done by choice. But the thing is, though, is that if they break that covenant and if they make the wrong choice, they've got to be willing to face the consequences of that. Now, you know, there's a certain extent that we as parents let our children begin to make decisions for themselves. And they've got to face the consequences of those decisions, because in many cases, that's the way they're going to learn. I can tell them all day long, don't do this, be sure you do that. Sometimes experience has to be the teacher. And so God tells them, and He's already told them, and He will show them, that they've got to be willing to face the consequences of those choices. Now, in some cases, those consequences are going to be fatal. And in many of those fatal cases, that fatality is going to be immediately. And there's a tragedy in this. You know, we would look at kind of some of the instant fatalities and say, well, that's a tragic thing. But how about being told at the beginning of the how many ever years wandering, you're never going to see the promised land. You're just going to die in the wilderness. You're a dead man walking, basically. Okay? So you've got to be willing to face that consequence. And so, you know, it really comes down to conceptually, obedience versus disobedience. Are they going to obey the word of the Lord and then as a result seek His blessing? Or are they going to disobey? And we're going to see that termed throughout Numbers as faith versus rebellion. And unfortunately we see evidence of both of those things. So they're free to make choices. Concerning Numbers as a whole, for better or for worse, Numbers is a very honest book. What was supposed to be a record of fulfilled promises has turned into a cautionary tale. Okay? Moses was tasked with keeping a journal of both their journeys and their battles. And these journals, I'm confident, were supposed to be a record of the successes that Israel completed as they went through their journey with Him toward the promised land, so that then future generations could see what would happen when they were faithful to God. And yet we instead get a record of successes and failures, and there are many failures throughout this book. And I don't mean to make Numbers sound so dour, but it is a tragic book in some regards. Look at how Paul categorizes it. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10 real quick. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Now, he's talking about kind of the development of Israel as a whole throughout Exodus through Deuteronomy. But their time during the book of Numbers is definitely a focus here. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 through 13. Excuse me. And this is right after Paul has just gotten done talking about running the race in order to win and enduring in such a way that you win the prize. Okay? And he says that run in such a way that you may win. Everyone who competes exercises self-control in everything.
However, they do it to receive a perishable crown, but we an imperishable one. And that's where he goes on to talk about running in such a way that he's not disqualified. He then immediately launches into a review of Israel's past as evidence for this very point. Now I want you to know, brothers, chapter 10, verse 1. Now I want you to know, brothers, that our fathers were all under the cloud, all passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. They all ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from a spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But God was not pleased with most of them, for they were struck down in the desert. That's the book of Numbers. Now these things became examples for us, so that we will not desire evil as they did. Don't become idolaters, as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and got up to play. That's from Exodus chapter 32. Let us not commit sexual immorality, as some of them did. And in a single day, 23,000 people fell dead. Let us not tempt Christ, as some of them did, and were destroyed by snakes. Nor should we complain, as some of them did, and were killed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as examples, and they were written as a warning to us, on whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, whoever thinks he stands must be careful not to fall. No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to humanity. God is faithful, and he will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation, he will also provide a way of escape so that you are able to bear it. This concept was definitely in play in their time throughout the book of Numbers. Okay? And so that's kind of, I want to underline this point down here at the bottom. Some of you may not be able to see it. When you read through these narratives, one thing to keep in mind, and it's a very important thing, and I think it's part of what Paul is getting at there in 1 Corinthians 10. Remember the people. Because these are real people. But these are real people interacting with a very real and imminent God. Okay? And that's what we're doing as well. I've kind of quit teaching and gone to sermonizing here. But it really makes you think about when we come together here to worship, what are we doing? We're supplicating ourselves before a holy God, the same God that did all these things in the book of Exodus through Deuteronomy, and all the things throughout Joshua and Judges, and so on and so forth. Do we put ourselves in a mindset to worship him in the way that he needs to be worshipped? Are we giving him the reverence that he's due? The reverence that he's called them to in Leviticus and Numbers? Okay? And we can look at these people and say, how could they, having seen the plagues, having gone through the Red Sea, having eaten manna in the wilderness, having been led by the fire and cloud, having defeated the Amalekites, I mean, miracle after miracle, how could they not see? Why are they grumbling against the God when give it 2 weeks and you'll be in the promised land? How many of us would have done the same thing they did? I don't know. You know, one time Amanda and I were talking about our favorite and least favorite characters in the Bible. And I mentioned that Peter was one of my least favorite characters in the Bible because Peter was right there with Jesus, step for step, and he just missed the mark so many times. And yet, I am Peter. We are Peter. We miss it so often. So did Israel. And that's what Paul's telling us. Don't miss it. Okay? God brings you to these places where you might be tempted, but he will help you through it. And he will provide that way of escape. And the way of escape was there for them. And in many cases, they didn't take it. But that's what Numbers is there to teach us. God is faithful to his promises. Okay?
So, for better or for worse, Numbers is an honest book, and it's a book that causes us to need to be honest with ourselves as well. All right? So, another initial thought on Numbers. When we realize that, when we realize what God does for His people and how He's there for them every step of the way, God can move people forward when they trust His promises and His Word. And this is a key idea in Numbers. He will move His people forward when they trust His promises and His Word. This is also going to be a key idea in Joshua as well, as they're actually coming into the land and the conquest is happening. And so, you know, a good way to think about this is faith equals rest. Faithlessness equals restlessness. Okay? When they are faithful to the Lord, as Hebrews tells us, He will bring them to the place of rest. When they are faithless, He will make them restless. But there's a point behind that. He will make them restless so that they run back to Him. When you start to feel that itch in your legs, that burning under your toes, there's a place you need to start to run, and that's back to God. And so that's what He was telling them to do. And that's what He said in Leviticus chapter 26. When they come into the land and when they're unfaithful to Him, I will cause all of these things to happen to you. And He'll reiterate this point to the second generation in Deuteronomy chapter 28. When you are unfaithful to Me in the land, I will bring these things upon you. But I will remember My promise. And when you turn back to Me, I will be there for you with open arms. Okay? That's what this is meant to do. And that's what Numbers is meant to teach us. All right? So He's meant to give us restless leg syndrome. All right? So, and in the face of all that, another thing to remember, and these are all related points. I realize I'm kind of reiterating the same thing over and over again. But God continues to keep His promises even in the face of rebellion. Even when God said, I'm going to take this down just to Moses. And I'm going to just take Moses into the promised land. And I'm going to send an angel in and get rid of all the people in Canaan. And I'm going to start over with you. Now Moses intercedes and says, no, Lord, if You're not going to go with us, please don't make us go. And please forgive the people their sin. And God does relent in that regard. But the thing is that what the people don't see is every step of the way, God continues to provide food, water, and guidance. He has not left them yet. He has not left them. And His promise will be confirmed. And again, we see that at the end of Leviticus. He wants them to return to Him. Okay? So, amen to that. So, you know, a lot of these are just kind of thoughts that I had as I was thinking about kind of some of the events in the book. Please feel free to share more if any of these things, anything else, any other comments on this. I realize I've kind of gone to preaching here. Karen.
Yeah. And you try to push it along it.
Yes.
As you push it.
Yep.
And I thought, that's kind of like an obstinate person.
Yes.
Trying to push us along and
dragging. Yep.
If we would just obey and trust Him, and it's so much smoother.
Yep. How many times I have wanted to pick up my kids and just say, I am just trying to help you. I'm just trying to help you. If you would just see that, then this would go so much smoother. Unfortunately, that's not how we look. There's a reason they're called the children of Israel, by the way. But very good point. That's a very good point. And I mean, you know, I think about that very often. When I try to dodge through traffic, often I end up five cars back of where I was at the end of it and then at the start of it. So, you know, if I would just trust the system, then it would all just go a lot better for me. Any other thoughts on the book of Numbers? Mary. Yeah.
We have all that right there. But we're just as guilty. You know, I love
Titus. Yeah. Yeah, Satan was working on them, but, and I'll say a big but here, so was God. And that's a point that he's going to make in Deuteronomy chapter 4. I brought you through the wilderness in order to, I might have that wrong. Is that Deuteronomy chapter 8? Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. Either way, in the early part of Deuteronomy, he says, I brought you through the wilderness to discipline you, to teach you, as a father does his child. So, again, that children moniker definitely comes into play here. But, I mean, you know, it is so easy for me to stand back and judge these people from my cushy bed at my house, sitting in front of my big screen TV, in my air conditioning, you know, underneath my ceiling fan, as I go to my refrigerator and get my cold water and, you know, ice cream. I'm not in these people's shoes. This is a different place. It's a different time. Definitely, they are given to us as an example. That's what Paul says. That's the whole point of the narrative. But lest we be too quick to judge them, remember there's a reason that we see why this narrative is there. That's true. So keep that in mind as we go through the book of Numbers. These are great thoughts. Anything else? David.
I Googled it. Censuses.
Thank you. Sensei doesn't sound right, does it?
Well, a census is based on a Latin word, but it isn't a true Latin word.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for clearing that up for us. Okay. Well, just a few more things as far as setup goes, and then Sunday morning we're going to dive right in to Numbers, and we're going to try to do Numbers chapters 1 through 10. My plan is to cover each of those sections as a class, so maybe 5 to 6 more classes on this, but bear with me if we go a little bit longer. But some things here, just kind of some housekeeping things, but also getting into the book. I mentioned that some of these chapters are concurrent with Leviticus, potentially concurrent. The first of those, Leviticus chapter 9 and verse 22, if you remember, Leviticus chapter 9 is the institution of the priesthood. Okay? And so if we look in Numbers chapter 6, you could turn over there real quick. Numbers chapter 6. What we see in Leviticus chapter 9 is Aaron, after he's been consecrated and the temple's been consecrated, or the tabernacle's been consecrated, he comes out and it says, Aaron lifted up his hands toward the people and he blessed them. We don't have details as to what that blessing was until we get to Numbers chapter 6. And it's almost like an addendum there at the very end of that chapter. This is where we get that famous phrase from that song that we sing sometimes. The Lord bless you and protect you. The Lord make his face to shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord look with favor on you and give you peace. This is called the Aaronic blessing. Okay? And so this is how they were to bless, but we don't get the actual words of it until Numbers chapter 6. Okay? So this part potentially concurrent with events in Leviticus. Another part here, Leviticus chapter 8, going back one chapter in Leviticus, chapter 8 through verses chapter 9 through 21, again still surrounding the consecration and anointing of the priesthood. We see here Moses took the anointing oil and anointed the tabernacle and everything in it to consecrate them. And then in Numbers chapter 7, verses 1 through 89, we have after Moses anointed and consecrated these things, the leaders of Israel and the heads of their ancestral houses presented an offering. And they were, each tribe was supposed to bring an offering over a day. And so we end up with 12 days. This potentially coincides with the consecration of the priests. Remember, they were supposed to remain within the sanctuary or within the tabernacle complex for 8 days. Okay, so we get 8 days, we get 12 days, there's potentially a 4-day overlap. This is somewhere around the same time. All right, so it would make sense. And really, it would make sense if it was 8 days and then 12 days, because right after this we get the Passover. We'll get to that in just a second. Okay, but notice as you read through number 7, 1 through 89, and really if you read one presentation, you've kind of read them all because it's the same thing over and over and over again throughout. But one thing that's kind of interesting about this is if you notice the order of presentation, who presents their gifts and the order it's done in, mirrors the structure around the camp. If you see this, okay? So the structure around the camp, you have the Levites surrounding the tabernacle, and then you have three tribes per side on the east, west, south, north, and south. Okay? And so each of those three tribes is there listed, and they're all listed under a subcategory. So there's Judah's tribe, there's Reuben's tribe, I think there's Ephraim's tribe, and I believe the other one is Dan's tribe. I could be wrong about that. But there's three tribes in those, and they're all listed together. It's the same order that we see in Numbers chapter 7. Okay? And that's also the order that they march in. So it's kind of interesting. Again, God is a God of order, and He does all of these things in an orderly manner. Okay? So another potential chapter concurrent to Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 23, verses 4 and 5. This isn't so much a narrative part as it is the instruction. But this is where God gives the instructions about the Passover and when it's to be kept. And so He says, "The Passover to the Lord comes in the first month at twilight on the 14th day of the month." So potentially in Leviticus, that instruction is given before the Passover comes back around. However, we see Him in Numbers chapter 9, in the first month of the second year after their departure from Sinai, the Lord told Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, the Israelites are to observe the Passover at its appointed time. Okay, so that's what's happening here in Numbers. We come full circle back around to the night before the Exodus. And then further instruction is given in chapter 9 there for those that might be unclean at the time that the Passover comes around. And an interesting note, especially as they're conquering foreign lands, foreigners living among them are allowed to partake in the Passover as well, as long as they do it according to the pattern. Okay? So that's important to realize. We look at Israel's sojourns and we think this is a very kind of Israel-centric thing. God only meant for these things to happen to Israel. But others could be grafted in. It's almost like we're going to see this again in the future somewhere. So be looking for those patterns. Okay, thank you very much for your comments. We'll pick up with Numbers chapter 1 on Sunday.
Put it in your shirt pocket.